design trade-off is whether you want like the output, the quantity of the work, or the quality of the work.
So you're talking about it in like a Mechanical Turk context?
No.
Because the literature of crowdsourcing would say the more you have, the higher the quality. So that's why
we're doing Metabus. So it's Metabus, a meta-analytic omnibus. So we're actually coding all the literature in OB, and you go online and you can actually do instant meta-analysis. So we need a lot of high-quality coders, but we want to expand, right? And get more coders, because graduate students are expensive, and so trying to actually get to kind of bring the price down so we can get bigger, that's why I'm here.
So you're coding academic papers.
That's right, exactly. So, you know, things like sample size, effect size, research design, and anything you might see in a meta-analysis. So it's a big project, right? And, you know, we've got like about a million effect sizes, but we're kind of looking for a way now to, you know, make it more sustainable.
Just curious, how do you recruit the quote-unquote workers, and what incentives do you provide?
It's paid for this, but that, I think, I was to get it to a kind of a point where it'd be kind of proof of concept and working. And we have a selection, and you know, standard selection training program. We have a manager which goes in, we spot check, we do all those good things. But you know, at this rate, we'll be done in the year, you know 2150, right? You know, in fact, the field expands faster than we code, so we'll never be done, right? So we have to be able to gear up.
But maybe linking your point to the academic literature and what Anne just said, I mean, the literature clearly says the more the better. But also the problem we are seeing is the more you need to absorb. And absorption is pretty difficult. So is the more always better? Is there some optimum, basically? So that could be some academic.
Oh, yeah, more people.
So what is the trade-off? I mean, as a manager, you need to spend a lot of time to read through all these ideas. And I mean, well, if you have 1 million submissions, you have maybe one extreme outlier, but it takes you 10 years to read all the ideas.
I think you do need a limited, a certain expertise to code an academic paper. And once we have people's process threshold and something's triple or quadruple coded, that'd be great. But they do need to kind of that pass a certain threshold, at least for this. We find that a challenge, right? You just can't throw people at it. In fact, I had the chance to talk to Chris Lintott about using the Zooniverse for it. You know, this is what we wanted to do for more people. And said, it's just not going to work with the average person.
Great. Okay, thank you. Other trade-offs?
Is there an issue of ability to automate all the skill tasks that need to be put out in the account to be able to increase the size?
That's what we're thinking about. Like maybe we can take parts of it and like just put the sample size. Undergraduates can do that part. Need more sophisticated parts to it. So breaking down a flow.
So what was your point? That skills versus
the need to automate or de-skill the tasks that need to be.
What's the trade-off? How much automation versus not?
Yeah, keeping this complex versus.
That's a good one. Yeah, it is. It's and what part of it do you need crowd coding for? Who should crowd code it?
Right.
How you prepare tasks for that?
Do you want me to do that?
That's right. Keep going. Other trade.
As you incentivize people, there's a bit of game playing as well, perhaps, that you're unintentionally creating people, not necessarily doing purposeful and meaningful work, but just doing it to get the rewards and the points and things like that. So if you want people who do it for love, you kind of lose those if you're giving money. So you can sort of be counterproductive if you're trying. I think, you know, those are two different crowds.
I think Wikipedia is even having trouble with that. Keeping a lot of their entries, people are incentivized to rewrite them to take a particular point of view. Yeah. And they're constantly being changed back and forth. It's very difficult for them to fight against that. Not everyone contributes Wikipedia just to make it more accurate.
Other trade-offs?
I think that's ownership. Because as a manager, you need to decide if you want to own the technology or the knowledge that is generated, versus allowing the crowd or the entrepreneur, you can think, to advance the technology and be an user of that instead of being the owner.
So is that an IP issue, intellectual property?
Yeah, it could be connected to I, later on, could be helping out in the development of the IP. Sometimes it's unfair.
Yeah, good. Go on, you got 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And what happens after that?
Then we go on to the next one. Next question.
So they're crowdsourcing this. How much do I? So they're crowdsourcing this.
I wonder if when you make contests and so on, if there is no chance you're going to, if I participate because I want to be on the leaderboard, and there's no chance I'm going to be on the leaderboard, maybe I just give up.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a perverse effect of giving leaderboards and contests. I mean.
Yeah, right.
If you're not that competitive, or if you feel that you're never going to make it, so don't even try or start.
Because people focus on the contest.
So you want it competitive versus not too, or giving up,
yeah.
So if you make a game too hard to start off with, you never actually start to engage with it.
Or if the game's too old, right? You come to a community that's 2 years old,
exactly.
You can never catch up.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so maybe lose fresh ideas, fresh different points of view there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have to have some type of graduated program where you make it easy and then they can graduate to harder coding tasks.
From a very theoretical standpoint, recently, well, this year we published a paper that's tackling this in research policy, and we say, like, how managers decide on the search dimension on the word. So if it's narrow search, so it's close to what you know, versus it's broad. We know the broader, the more useful, the close, the more narrower to your field, the less interesting. And also another dimension that combined with this is the cognitive dimension versus experiential dimension. So it's how to search and where to search. And we explore like 30 projects on these challenges and explain the mechanisms, the problems, objectives, and so on.
Is there a trade-off?
Yeah, there are two trade-offs that we're trying to put together. The cognitive dimension of experiential projects or cognitive projects versus that's the how to search. And the word search is narrow search in terms of field versus distance search.
Yeah, I got that. I wasn't sure I understood the
idea. Yeah, this is only one dimension of where do we search for the knowledge. It's also what type of cognitive
lenses of experiential.
Yeah, experiential versus cognitive.
Oh, okay.
So I get the first one. I think the first one is also more like, who do you want to solve your problem? Do you get the people who are closer to the field, or do you get people who are more distant?
Mm-hmm.
But less like, you know, so you have to trade off the two. So the closer ones may not have the novel perspective to really solve it, although they have more of a bite, you know, they can bite into the problem. The distant one, you have to do a lot more to find that one little, you know, person who has the brilliant idea to do
it. That we use, when companies or individuals use the previous knowledge.
Okay.
And in the cognitive dimension, when we elaborate is when you look for in distant fields.
Okay.
Use different, like, if you think about, there are the book from Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow from Kahneman.
Okay.
So we try to elaborate also these dimensions.
Kind of the same trade-off, but different perspective to look at it.
Yeah.
One from the who's solving it perspective, the other is where do you look for the solution?
Yeah,
so,
and that's
how do you look
for the solution?
I don't know if there's any connection with ethics if you do it purely as a crowdsourced, open, no incentives versus introducing incentives, whether you start to get into some ethical issues around what kind of incentives are appropriate for different people, different communities, I don't know.
No, that's a huge issue for Amazon Mechanical Turk.
I mean,
factories that they don't
pay I saw some examples, for example, for some firms, a monetary incentive might be useful. But if you're a PhD student in study science and they provide incentive, the firm provides incentive to develop your idea at MIT, just to give a name. So that incentive is more valuable than getting $10,000.
Yeah.
You cannot get to the MIT with $10,000.
Okay, I'm sure there are lots of interesting conversations about trade-offs, but each session moving along, if we could get each table group to think about the second question. So thinking about specific factors such as monetary incentive and gamification slash gamization, what are the most effective means by which to motivate participants in crowdsourcing projects? So it'd be interesting to get a perspective.
What does he mean by effective? Cost effective?
I think it'd be total outcome, right?
Joe, we have a question here. Oh, sure. What do you mean by effective, or do you want us to define that?
I'd like you to define
that. I never should have asked that. You ticked your hat. You just gotta like, by that.
Okay. We got to define it ourselves. To get the most work done, or I guess the best quality work, or there are actually many different ways of fastest speed of defining.
If the money is not made, is there, but it's not made in a way that's going to distract them from being focused on the task at hand, money does not get in the way of intrinsic motivation. So it's money that's put in a way that's not, it's when the reward is put in front of you and now distracting you from the task at hand.
So the suggestion you're making is money should not distract.
That's right.
Okay.
Then there's basically, you always do better with money.
With money.
Yeah, with money.
Actually, I know at least there's one study that compares, like in the context of that, I'm having a Turk. If one situation is doing it for a commercial firm who pays you, the other one is doing for a nonprofit organization. And people do a better job working for the nonprofit organization. So there are situations, I believe, that especially if the money is too small and trivial, that could actually demotivate.
Well, yeah, that's right. It could be because the money is. Money is also information.
But I agree that there are situations where money could provide additional. The hard thing is to figure out under what circumstances it does distract and does not distract.
And what size becomes distracting.
Yes, I've been running experiments on this with Amazon Pentacle Turing. It's just so hard because it's not a linear thing.
Right.
So you have to pick your paper very carefully to capture. Yeah, it's clearly not. It's probably more like something like this. And then whether it drops.
Yeah,
where it's got dips.
So what determines where it's effective? Or is it always the same?
It depends a lot on the nature of the task and also who are the workers. Like the workers are different between the clusters, have very different value systems. They're motivated by money differently or different amounts of money.
So the goal should probably determine the incentives. So if you're looking for innovation, go both broad and distant. If you're looking for to solve a specific problem, go narrow.
Okay. Answering the question about what should be incentivized. What kind of performance behavior? What kind of behavior of the participants should be incentivized? I mean, do you use Netflix where they, like the algorithm required that the algorithm be available? Should involvement in discussion threads, should refining other people's ideas be incentivized? I mean, what's your experience tell you? Is it just the outcome? In other words, there's an outcome, there's the process, you know, the getting to that outcome. Those are two different things.
Yeah, because if you incentivize, let's say, quantity, quality would drop. You're basically telling people what to focus on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so whatever you're not focused, whenever you're not rewarding, you're going to see a drop in that.
Yeah.
So if you're like, that's what often happens is that when you just do it in a pure quantity, you get a lot more. So if you do that, you have to have some, put more money back into some performance checking.
I mean, the contest literature and the economic side has brought a long history about all incentives and what to do and so on. So that's a really rich literature to get to it. And also what is quite interesting, talking about motivations here and so on. I know this, at the Code Innovation Lab did some recent study and where we combined some motivations. So for example, we offer them some reward, some money, and some reputation, and it differs. Whatever if you combine them, so it doesn't sum up. So it could be some interaction and so on. So that is, I think, something quite interesting to take a look into it. And they're studying some crowding out effects and so on. So that could be quite interesting.
So what we would write down here is that you should incentivize multiple. Pardon?
Yeah, multiple interactions and yes. And mm-hmm. interaction. Yeah.
But I think this is also a recruitment problem. I mean, because, you know, there are people who are going to be motivated mostly by the money, and other people by the learning, and other people by this. And if you marketed well and get to the right crowds, then you would know what type of rewards they would like.
Well, but I mean, when I offer you $500, well, if I offer you $500 and a listing on a web page, would you say, well, I only take $500?
Yeah, but you might, some people might do it for $100 in listing.
You see, there's a quite interesting interaction effect, and you might also say, well, I don't want to be listed because I'm quite a shy guy and I don't want to be listed in public.
So I suppose what we get from you is that people are motivated by different things, and maybe what we need to do is do some sort of pilot or study before about what might motivate the crowd we want to get involved.
I think another cool idea, I don't know if you got this or not, and is the personalized motivation. It's paying the money for others, is telling them they're making a difference.
It's the recognition that I put some effort into contributing and I get some feedback. So feedback, recognition, I think, somehow would play an important role.
Or you're being able to create a community
where people say you appreciate how much you've done.
Exactly.
There are ways you can either use algorithms or you can solicit some information to figure out where they stand among the many different types. Maybe you could just offer, tailor the incentives to them.
Well, I know Hive is now doing that, where Hive is a product design platform, and when you join Hive and you then start in getting engaged in a particular contest, you're given a list of incentives and then you allocate points and stuff.
So that's self-selection, you choose, right?
Yeah, it's personal.
I think we should also take into account it's not only about the incentive, but it's about the platform that we're talking about, and maybe the innovation stage, early stage project, maybe the incentives can be very fast, you know, very general, whereas in the end, if you're providing IP, the incentive has to be different.
Right.
Some of this is based on reputation building. So when if people can build their reputation based on their performances, they would usually settle for less money. Okay, in one of my classes, I ask students to outsource to Upwork, and I give them a limit of the product, and usually with the little amount of money they're allowed to use, people who have just started in the platform are accepting that because they want to build a reputation. So that all that tells something also with the role of the design of the platform.
Yeah.
This platform, the design of the platform affects what kind of, what incentivizes people to do it. Because there is that room in the in the space for the design platform to build reputation, the incentives can change.
Yeah, well, it's about time we need to move on to consider the third question today, which is how does crowd management differ at different stages in the project life cycle?
All right, everyone get up there. Run it down.
I just want to add, I think the previous question, its emphasis on money and gamification, were a bit of a red herring. They're kind of throwing off that question to mean about, which is just motivating. How do you motivate it?
So would that change over time during the project?
Yeah. That's a good point. I think motivation does change over the project. At the beginning, when you're small, you can't do a lot of... especially when you don't have a lot of money, right?
But it's exactly what you said about Wikipedia, isn't it? In the beginning, you can have people that really do it for the love of the project, and then as that passion goes off, and then you start off.
Well, they actually started off as a paid one, they, before they went to Wikipedia. So they actually started off being an online paid, and I think they got like 50 articles or something.
Not Britannica did that. They started an online encyclopedia with paid moderators that made pages, like they were specific experts, and then died, and then Wikipedia was the free version that was made by non-experts.
I think it's called Wikipedia or something.
But maybe you need to make some sort of initial investment to get it.
Yeah.
So maybe you need some initial investment to get some scale, and then maybe that would attract.
Actually, a good analogy here is if you think about traditional organizations, especially companies, they have their life cycles. You know, it's like new startup companies clearly have different concerns than well-established, large-scale companies.
Well, I think the most important word in that sentence is crowd, right? And so if you don't have a crowd when you start, like some of these places have crowds built in, like Hive is going to have a crowd, OpenIDEO has a crowd already, right? But until you actually develop that crowd, you're in a tight spot unless you can pay them off like mechanical tool. So the first stages have to be very low barriers to entry, exciting. If you're gonna pay them throughout, you know, it'd be kind of a shame to pay them early and then cut that off, right? So maybe there's a big money prize at the end for the winners, whatever. But I think crowd is the most important word in this phrase. And until you get that crowd,
yeah,
you're kind of stuck.
Yeah, the start, there is no crowd.
Well, some places, you know, like have a built-in or built-up crowd, or large businesses, like if you look at Dell IdeaStorm, like Dell snapped a crowd in 2 weeks, right? So it's definitely possible to do, and Dell did it without offering any money at all because they were Dell. So, you know, and Google could do the same thing.
Well, I'm not sure. They probably pumped it out to like 1,000
people. Oh, I'm sure they spent on average.
People that start from scratch, like Dell, but people would usually try to build that early success and would do things at the beginning that they wouldn't do later. Airbnb, for example, when they first started, they would go to the houses, they only started like in New York.
Right.
They would actually go to the houses and check them out and make sure that those houses are good. So they want to make sure that they have that early success. And once that takes off, then they don't need to do that anymore. They don't go check houses in the middle of nowhere. But they needed to build that early success. So they do things differently.
There's an issue of quality.
Yeah, but and also they act more like a normal organization at the beginning until they build this early trust and then they let things evolve.
What might be the second stage?
once they get the crowd,
and
the buzz.
And there's buzz.
And there's what?
And there's a lot of buzz. Have you heard about this? It's
Yeah, scaling up the platform.
Pardon me?
Scaling up the platform.
Well, how about a second stage being something like deciding where's the purpose of the crowd come in? I mean, does it have to... Are we saying that we have to have community before we create a crowd? Or are we saying we can create a crowd on a general topic and then you... I mean, like Hive, you know, has a crowd of innovators with not a particular focus until the competition comes in. So what are we suggesting? Because we apparently have a crowd now.
Yeah, I think that they you have to decide whether they're going to manage themselves along Wikipedia or whether you're going to manage them.
Okay.
Right. So when you're setting the rules for this community and how it's going to work, once you have the crowd, you can either leave it up to them or you can figure it out.
We probably should figure it out up front.
Well, yeah, I mean, like Wikipedia had guiding rules, right? Sort of like a constitution, right? So, you know, neutral point of view, not a democracy, no voting, stuff like that. But that was, those were decided early, but they've changed a little bit, right? Like there's voting in Wikipedia in the background. Yeah. So, and they were changed by the crowd over time.
Probably
the
rewards.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then what
happened? Maybe as a insult of those groups is the need for them to reinvent themselves, develop or create new visions. The ones that do that tend to survive more.
Right.
Probably does not put Wikipedia.
It does, like the turnover in editors, the users, the new editors, the process. There's a big story on it last year about how there's no more editors and Wikipedia is dying and all that.
It's been declining for the past 9 years.
Right.
Yeah.
The ratio of pages and editors
is
going
up. My number of edits on top pages is also those bad. But yeah, there's got to be a maturity point, right, that you reach. And there's after the buzz and hype falls.
Do you let the crowd go?
I don't think you have a choice.
Well, or do you force the resilience as much as you can, or do you just say okay?
You incentivize resilience, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
If you're creative enough, I guess you can do it. You know, the same thing happens with companies like how Apple was able to reinvent itself, but Kodak couldn't.
Yeah,
so
right.
I think it's just it's case by case.
Yeah.
Who's going to drive the reinvention? I mean, Apple or management?
Yeah. What's interesting in this particular case, it's not just one city, it's not a big foundation, it's really you have to work with the crowd,
mm-hmm.
and leverage the crowd.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
How about leadership? Where does that come in? Do we have, and the core peripheral, there's a lot of research on core. We're saying that the core is important in all these three stages. Is there a single core? Is there a core chain? What do you think?
I think leadership is probably more important in the beginning than later on.
Interesting.
I guess because you need that charisma or that pushing the values and sort of setting the background or setting the scene. And,
okay.
And I guess doing all that work, sort of institutional work, is perhaps needed more in the beginning than when, you know, things are more sort of stabilized and it becomes more internalized in the actual mechanics of how the community works rather than dependent on a single person or a group of small people, you know, a small group. And I think over time the values and the culture do that. Perhaps, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I guess you always need someone that is considered to be, I don't know, somehow representing the
Is it always you need someone, or what do you think?
I think something else to take into account is where the kind of competition, you know, it's one thing if you are the only crowd community in this topic, or if there are other communities in that topic, maybe the the management strategy might differ, you know, what, like Mechanical Turk, if there is only one, you can have one strategy, there are two or three that offer the same kind of services.
In terms of corporate flow, actually, that could be one challenge in managing the crowd. Is like in the case of Wikipedia, the core was not withering, or the core was still pretty strong, but it's the lack of newcomers who fill the peripheral to eventually become the core. And there's actually a lot of kind of tension between what the core wants and what the newcomers bring that the core may not necessarily like.
Right.
I think that's part of the challenge of, it's not just one cohesive crowd actually, it's
a very diverse
crowd.
Right.
Which is gonna grow more fractured over the length
that's
of the project.
That's
right?
The price.
It's like if you have a contest like Netflix that ends at a certain point, you know, you might not worry about as much, but if you're building something long term.
So maybe then it's about an issue of renovation then.
Maybe it's a technological maturity. As soon as a new technology comes up, the newcomers might want to bring it in, and the older ones resist because that's their, I mean, they are knowledgeable about the older technology. I think
is what management actions might help to steer the innovative efforts of a crowd.
Well, what's your thought about roles, maybe? Maybe management can encourage certain roles. So,
or established. You're laughing, so you got to have something to say.
Oh, no. I mean, like, I'm very familiar with Anne's work on roles, and so.
So that's why. And everything else.
You know. I think there's definitely roles, and certainly there's roles that we haven't even figured out yet that exist in these communities. But I'm a big fan of like hands-off management in crowds, because I think that they need to create on their own. So you're buying what you want. And
do you want them to be innovative? Do you need them to be innovative? I mean, some crowdsourcing things, you want them to be innovative, other ones.
But I think the issue of feedback that you're mentioning earlier, if you keep saying, you know, this is what we have achieved, this is what give a sense of progress, then people might feel, yeah, we're achieving something. And so I think maybe creating feedback mechanisms and a sense of progress might.
And maybe, Jeremiah, based on what you were suggesting, maybe not specify roles, but maybe allow them to merge or something. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
I enjoy merge roles.
So you would not necessarily, it sounds like, Jeremiah, you would not necessarily be like a moderator, heavy moderator.
Yes.
Right.
Sort of a light moderation touch, if at all.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't like,
unless
it was
like a family crowdsourcing thing, in which case you need to, there's certainly room, places for moderation.
Because like the Open IDEO model is very heavy moderation.
Right.
You know. Okay, so light moderation.
I'm focused particularly on innovative efforts, which is why I say moderation.
You would reward for innovation? Is that what you just said?
If innovative was not in there, right? If you're just like talking about steering the efforts of a crowd, a captive crowd or an internal innovation something, then probably more moderation is going to be necessary. But for innovative efforts, I think toning that moderation down.
What else does managers need to do?
I think if we focus specifically on the contests, we talked about earlier, then if you can't, if you talk about context type of crowdsourcing, and then you need to create new competitions, new problems, so that people can rise to the leaderboard, kind of renovation.
Yeah.
And let me build off of Anna's point. So Anna's talking about building a new contest, which I would categorize as like an organizational aspect. But you can also imagine that you would set up the technology to focus them in a specific way too. And I think management as a broad concept might actually apply to both.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
How could technology be used to help steer?
Yeah, so if you decide, oh, we're going to break it up by topics, or we're going to decide that we're going to break it up on the whatever tool we're using to or it might be to do the other thing. So using the technology to structure, and even the tools that we pick. So do we pick a tool that allows for vote up and vote down, or do we pick a tool that's discussion only? And that's a managerial decision.
Yeah.
Do you have any recommendations on how you design technology to support?
Well, I do, and you know that Dirk has not responded to me. And so this one crowdsource situation, they proposed a discussion board, but discussion board, if it's a large crowd, becomes a morass very quickly. And so how do you know where the good conversations are? And the technology itself can say, well, the ones we're going to bubble up and show on the first page that posts are going to be the ones that are active, or are they going to be the ones that people rate as better? What is it going to be that helps different things bubble to the top as we think about the innovation?
So what would you recommend? What should bubble up to the top if you could do your
I'm a big fan of vote up, vote down,
okay.
But I don't have data.
But it could also be random, isn't it?
There you go.
Oh,
so are you a fan of vote up, vote down? Okay. I'm
but
feeling
if,
smart.
If that's, let's say somebody thinks there's something new and you implement it, you celebrate it.
You
like Susan, they were talking about Greenpeace. There was a type of galaxy that they talked. They celebrated that person arguing for the more attention. And they kept repeating it. That I'm sure everyone's thinking, well, I got to find myself my new type of star cluster. Right? It's the great, what stories of innovation that you celebrate you're likely going to foster.
So it's kind of a more human vote up, vote down.
Modeling.
Okay, that's
right. And I do think modeling is different than vote up, vote down.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
What do you mean by modeling?
Well, let's say you have on your landing page, hey, the great story, so and so, you know, found this,
right,
or investigating that, or
okay,
you know, something where people would read, or bring that person to
so
a conference.
So you're trying to modeling the right behavior. That
yeah,
you
exactly.
Oh, okay.
Celebrating them, like, or holding up somebody as a model.
Yeah. Okay.
That would be.
What else? Steer innovation.
What questions?
You've only
you
looked at 52 million of these. So what do you think?
Sorry?
Steer? You've only looked at 52 million of these. So what steers innovation? What do you think will foster more innovation for the crowd?
Well, I think we could link that we made some matching there, so that could work.
Okay. Spoken like a true economist. It's definitely in the incentive structure.
Right.
Okay. Certainly can't forget that.
I'm an engineer, by the way.
Yeah, okay,
by training.
I think if you put out specific questions to what you're doing here.
Pardon?
Questions you ask.
Okay. Oh.
So
we should ask questions that are more requiring.
Well, if you make it formal, what ways do you think we could do better? If you make like an actual question out to the crowd,
right,
and you make it targeted.
Right.
We're having trouble with this.
Right. So ask questions that foster innovation by targeting.
Yeah.
Is that what you're okay?
Nature of the question.
By targeting. Okay. Good.
Incentivize for innovation. Okay. So what would your ideal technology look like as an engineer to support innovation?
I don't know. I mean, we have voting mechanisms, we have some discussions. I mean, you could say, well, there's a lot of discussions going on, there's a lot of ideas, and maybe you can say, well, okay, there's a lot of discussion going on, there we can improve on that idea. So make it a two-step approach. So first, get the ideas from the crowd. Exactly. And then, well, there's a lot of discussion, you build upon these ideas.
Okay.
So like engineer, you build upon one step on another.